Imagine yourself a guest at the North Star Tavern, an inn in Boston's North End, in October of 1789. The proprietor, Mrs. Rachel Walker, is the mother-in-law of Paul Revere, and she's just the person to tell about what it was like to live through the American War for Independence. Ooh, you know, it might feel good to put words to what happened during the war. And before it, too. Oh, you couldn't put words to it back then. Too much going on all at once. I wonder if I could put words to it. I'll tell you one thing. That war started a whole lot sooner than anybody said it did. At first, King George would tax something, and we'd protest, and then they'd take that tax off. But then they'd lay one on something else. That went on all through the 60s. In 68, the king sends redcoat soldiers over here, and the protests started getting mobbish. In 70, a Boston mob goes after some redcoats who shot and killed five of them. Now that was the Boston Massacre. That was just the beginning. After that, the king repeals all the taxes except one, the tax on tea. That's still saying he had a right to tax us. Don't kings know that when you come down too hard on children, they rebel? We wouldn't pay their tax, so we didn't buy their tea, nor drink it. Oh, I do miss my tea. So for a while there, everything goes on to kind of a slow boil. But by November of 73, they were going to try to make us pay that tax, whether we drank their tea or not. His Majesty's tea ships, the Dartmouth, the Eleanor, and the Beaver, they docked with their holds full of tea. Boston called a town meeting. Mr. Samuel Adams warned them. They are supposed to unload those tea ships within 20 days. But unless those ships leave Boston Harbor untouched, we'll be paying King George his taxes. Town meeting voted to not let them unload. But the governor wouldn't let the ships leave the harbor with the tea. So those three ships just sat there off Griffin's Wharf, like bombs waiting to go off. Most of the men in town meeting didn't want to revolt. They just wanted to protest. But Mr. Samuel Adams, he kept fanning the flames of discontent. By the 19th day, every man in Boston was meeting, though it were illegal, at Old South Meeting House. It were the night of December 16th, as I recall. I heard noises in the street, and I realized I'd not seen my grandson Timmy for hours. I ran outside, and I saw a crowd, mostly men and boys, heading for the docks in the moonlight. No Timmy anywhere in sight. I joined the crowd, cutting through Flounder Alley onto C Street, and there were the three tea ships in the moonlight, and beyond them, 100 or so British warships, all through Boston Harbor. And still no Timmy in sight. But there were all these young men slipping through the crowd under Griffin's Wharf. Apprentices, I warrant, 14, 15 year old. It were hard to tell. Their faces were all smudged with black soot, charcoal dust from every blacksmith shop in Boston. Most had knit caps with feathers stuck in, and some wore blankets with fresh-cut armholes, or raggedy jackets or shawls. Oh, disguises, so's not to be identified, nor arrested. Somebody had planned this out. This was no mob action. Well, the moon was bright that night. We could see them gathering on the wharf in silhouettes, like shadows, all quiet and orderly-like, as if they was waiting for orders. None of them was making any sound. It was strange. Somebody divided them into three groups, and they pulled in the Dartmouth, the Eleanor, and the Beaver alongside Griffin's Wharf. Without a word, the three groups boarded the ships at the same time. But then there must have been 1,000 or so of us on the waterfront looking to see what was going to happen. We weren't talking either. It were quiet. Now, no man in Boston has ever admitted to being a Mohawk Indian there that night. And I have held my tongue these 16 years. But now, surely, it can be told. One of the Indians on the Dartmouth approached the captain on the bridge, and that Indian fella had the same short stature, square build, and vigorous walk of Paul Revere, and him 2 months married to my daughter Rachel. Of course, no man in Boston has ever admitted he were there that night. Whatever was said on that bridge, the captain and the sailors went below. The Indian fellas lifted up the hatch covers and began hauling the heavy wooden tea chests up from the hold. They'd hoist the chests to the rail, chop 'em open, dump out the tea, and throw the chests into the water. Soon the air was smelling more like tea than salt water. Them tall-masted ships, very grand, sat there in scummy clumps of tea. All she could hear was the chopping of the wooden chests, and then the splashes. I noticed a small person at the head of the Dartmouth's gangplank. It were a child. A boy. It were Timmy. What was Paul Revere thinking? What do men think sometimes? I started into praying, my eyes fixed on him. Dear Lord, please don't let those cannons point over this way. Well, after an hour or so, a couple of fellas yanked a fat man off to one side. They was all fighting, and he got away from 'em and ran down the gangplank and disappeared. And so there they stood, holding his coat. They turned it upside down and shook it out, and flaky, powdery stuff comes floating down. He'd been stuffing tea into his coat. Stealing. Whatever this was, it were not thievery. Thievery would ruin the honor of the thing. I must have been praying out loud by then, because all of a sudden I hear my daughter Rachel. She's squeezing in next to me. Mother, they don't dare turn their cannons this way. There's 3,000 people here. If they fire on us, the other colonies would go to war in a minute. 3 hours we stood there, stamping our feet in the clammy cold to keep warm. Finally, those Indian fellas start sweeping the decks clean. I thought, well, that's very obliging of 'em, but why? Oh, then I realized they were saying, this is a protest, this is not vandalism. I saw that, except for the tea, the only real damage done was to England's pride. Well, then the Mohawk Indian fellas start filing down the gangplanks, and from somewhere, somebody starts playing on a fife. Oh, I thought, ain't we grand to have our own army? But then I panicked, for I'd lost sight of Timmy, and some of them Indian fellas was disappearing into the crowd when they got there. And then I saw a red feather bobbing along, about half as high as the others. And I reached out and I grabbed the little fella and I hugged him till I heard him squeak, I can't breathe. So then I took the rascal by the ear and I started marching him home. At the head of Griffin's Wharf, there was an upstairs window opens up at the coffin's grand house. We couldn't see who was speaking, but it sounded like Admiral Montagu. Sounded jolly, but not truthful jolly. Well, boys, you've had a fine evening for your Indian caper, haven't you? Mind, you have yet to pay the fiddler's bill. Oh, a head comes out of the window. It were Admiral Montagu. Well, then a voice comes up from out of the crowd. Come on down here, sir. We'll settle that bill right now. Huh. In goes the head and down goes the window. I think to myself, them Indian fellas did make their point, didn't they? And then that little fife starts up again.